Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, CompassionateCooks.com. First off, thank you to today's sponsor, Roseanne Marulli, who has written to tell me that she's been inspired by this podcast and has found it helpful for finding the middle ground between, quote, downplaying my responses to people to avoid preaching or making them feel bad, and taking the bait from hostile people who are interested only in arguing. I know it's a tough line to walk, Roseanne, and I'm thrilled I can offer some tools through this medium. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your support and for your email. I hope you're enjoying the recipe for the tofu filet with spicy cornmeal crust. It's yummy. So thank you and take care. I look forward to hearing from you again. And thank you to all of the monthly and one-time sponsors. I'm so grateful. I know I keep saying that, and you're probably sick of hearing me say that, but I really am very grateful. If this podcast has helped you at all, if you have forwarded it on to friends, if you ever find yourself quoting from it, perhaps you'd like to sponsor it as well. All of the sponsors receive a recipe in return. Just let me know what type of recipe you're looking for. And that's just one of the perks of becoming a sponsor. The other perk is just knowing that you're supporting an effective medium of communication about an issue you do not hear covered in the mainstream or the progressive media. I've said before that I love hearing your stories of transformation, and I think that it's vital to tell our stories, both to remember where we came from and also to inspire others to hear their stories in ours. So with that in mind, I created a new website. It's essentially a blog called The Joyful Vegan, which features your stories. I'd love to include many, many more. We have about 15 up there right now. So please consider sending me yours, and I'll post it on the website. Check out joyfulvegan.wordpress.com. You can see the basic gist and length of the essays if you visit that website, and the homepage has some guidelines for you. So please check it out to be inspired and perhaps see yourself in the stories that are up there now. It's quite amazing how many different species we exploit and use and kill just for one species, just for Homo sapiens, and we find any and every way we can to use them for our purposes. We impregnate them and take their milk. We breed them and kill them and eat their flesh. We breed them and take their hair, their fur, and then kill them. We breed them and expose them to diseases, trauma, injury, and pain, and call it science. We buy and sell them. We make them our lawnmowers and turn them into cheap entertainment at circuses and zoos. We use them as draft animals to pull carts. We use them as pack animals to carry our loads. Many different species endure some or all of the plights I've just described, but today I want to talk about one particular species who endures all of these things and yet isn't really talked about a lot, even by animal advocates. Today I want to talk about and honor goats. And I want to dedicate this episode to one of the most amazing beings I've ever met, and I don't exaggerate. Anyone who doesn't believe animals have souls never met Neptune. A beautiful white goat rescued by a compassionate neighbor and brought to farm sanctuary over 11 years ago. Neptune's story prior to his rescue is a sad one, but I have no doubt that his life at the sanctuary healed his wounds. His powerful presence was apparent to everyone who just looked at him. He was filled with radiance and beauty and gentleness and love and wisdom. And I was often moved to tears just sitting with him, just being in his presence. I kid you not, his presence was that powerful. I had the privilege of spending many quiet hours with Neptune, and I have many fond memories of watching the sunset with him, something he did all the time. He would hold his head up and feel the breeze on his face and just seem to meditate as he faced the setting sun. During my recent visits to the farm, it was apparent that Neptune wasn't doing very well. His arthritis was worsening rapidly, and the pain medication wasn't giving him the relief he needed. And last week I received a call that his quality of life was compromised to the degree that he would be euthanized. A few days later, I was in a familiar scene, sitting next to Neptune again, as we had done so many times before, facing west into the breeze. It was extremely painful for him to walk, let alone stand, and it broke my heart to see him suffer. But through it all, as he struggled to walk down to the pasture, he maintained all the dignity that characterized this amazing being. He arrived at Farm Sanctuary about 11 years ago, after having endured a most hideous abuse. He was kept by a man who lived in a rural area and had several animals. A neighbor was concerned about the mistreatment of the animals, including that of Neptune and another goat, Neptune's female partner. This neighbor wanted to help the animals without raising ire in the animals' quote-unquote owner, but it was to no avail. The neighbor would finally just put out water and food for the animals, but it never got better. In fact, it was only when it got worse that this neighbor intervened and called the authorities. Unfortunately, it was this turn of events that would be bittersweet for Neptune, bitter in the worst way. The owner of the animals was angry at what the neighbor had done, having called the authorities, and retaliated in a cruel, hateful way. For reasons unknown, he decided to move, and he left some animals behind. And before he did, he cut the throat of Neptune's companion and left her hanging on a fence. Worse yet, he tethered Neptune to the fence with only 1 foot of rope. Neptune endured this for several days before the neighbor found him and brought him to Farm Sanctuary. That's the sweet part. And despite having been mistreated by a particularly cruel human, Neptune never held it against the other humans he met, and he met thousands, all of whom will tell you how incredibly special this goat was. I'm sure some of you listening to this right now know who I'm talking about, if you've ever visited the California shelter. As I grieve for the loss of his physical presence, my heart is filled with his spirit, his grace, his beauty, and my memory is filled with countless priceless shared moments. I left him at dusk, serenely lounging in his golden pasture, and as I drove away, I was filled, and I still am, with immense gratitude for having been among the lucky people who knew and loved this very special being. You can see pictures of Neptune by going to my Food for Thought blog, which is where you'll find, among other essays, this transcripts essentially to this podcast if you ever want a written account of what I'm saying. Anyway, visit compassionatecooks.com and click on blog or Food for Thought blog under resources or writings. It's actually really funny, as I was, paying a lot of attention to Neptune in those last days and talking about him a lot and thinking about him a lot, I realized that I have six framed photographs in my living room, two of David and myself, my husband and me, one of Simon, one of Schuster, there's one of me and a very good friend, and there's one of Neptune. And I realized that there's also a small picture of Neptune in our bedroom. We have one picture in our bedroom. There's a little framed picture on our dresser of me and David and Neptune. And then I realized I have a couple pictures of Neptune on our refrigerator and a couple pictures of Neptune on our wall going down the stairs. So he's been a huge part of our lives for many years, and he will be missed, but he will not be forgotten. Everyone who knows me knows that I absolutely love goats. They are just amazing animals. They are so funny and spunky and full of attitude. They're incredibly intelligent and playful and inquisitive. They'll explore anything new or unfamiliar in their surroundings, and they're just full of life. They actually remind me of cats in many ways, in that they love to be caressed, and they're a little, shall I say, manipulative in the ways in which they ask for this affection. They kind of come right up to you and bump up against you, but look the other way as if to say, oh, did you want to pet me? And if you were to walk away a few steps, they'll just stroll right over and push up against you again, still looking the other way, implying that they really want some love, but they're not gonna let you know that that's what they really want. Now, obviously, each individual is different. You know, every animal has their own personality, but in general, goats are just fabulous, fabulous animals. Goats were one of the first animals, along with sheep, that humans domesticated roughly 10,000 years ago. Ancient cultures and tribes kept them for their milk, for their hair, their meat, and skins, and it's no different today. Goat meat is popular in the Middle East, South Asia, Africa, northeastern Brazil, the West Indies, and Belize. It's called chevin, I think. I don't know how to pronounce the word they use to refer to the meat, but I think it's called chevin, just so you know if you ever see it on a menu. And though it's not popular in most Western nations, it's among the fastest growing sectors of the livestock industry in the United States. Goat meat consumption in the United States has increased 64% from 1999 to 2003, due in large part to increased consumption of quote unquote ethnic foods, including Latin American, Middle Eastern, and Caribbean cuisine. It's difficult to determine how many goats are killed in the United States since agricultural statistical services don't yet have a separate category for meat goats. I'm sure they will soon. USDA statistics list dairy and fiber goats, but meat goats fall into the other category. I've read a lot about what it's like for people who slaughter animals, whether it's on a small scale or a large scale, and I've learned that many of them have difficulty killing goats and hearing them scream because they, quote, cry like human babies. A lot of people who've experience this will tell you they cry, they sound like human babies, and it's really disturbing to those who are subject to those screams and who are creating those screams. Even to those who hear these screams day in and day out, screams from pigs, screams from cattle, screams from chickens, will tell you that it's the hardest for them to hear the goats. I recently read a lovely essay by a woman who, along with her husband, ran a goat milk dairy and eventually got out because it was just too emotionally difficult. This essay is an excerpt from their website, maplefarmsanctuary.org, where they still have some animals who they care for and love, and they will take care of them for the rest of their lives. And this is what Sherry writes about her experience after leaving the aquarium where she worked and was distressed, by the way, at the treatment of the animals there. So she starts at that point. I left the aquarium and entered the high-tech industry as a graphic designer, but always with an animal or two in my life. I met my husband, Jim, waiting to be laid off and collecting goats for my goat milk business. Jim was selling his dairy cows and was planning on raising replacement heifers. One day I entered the barn while he was milking and noticed an obviously ill calf. I questioned what would happen to her. He told me, regardless of the calf's illness, it would be sent to a livestock dealer where it would be sold for meat. At the time, I had some money set aside and pleaded with him to let me take care of the sick calf. He reluctantly agreed. I brought the calf to Tufts Veterinary Clinic, where the vet started IV fluids and antibiotics and said that if left uncared for another day, the calf would have died. When she was well enough, I brought her back to the farm where she eventually became a dairy cow. In time, our conscience would not allow us to continue milking our cows for the purpose of producing dairy products. Instead, we increased the goat herd and began selling goat milk. The very unfortunate byproduct of this was what to do with all the baby goats, the kids. They're called kids. In certain ethnic communities, it's tradition to have baby goat meat during Easter. Those of Portuguese and Greek descent who knew of our farm would overwhelm us during this period. We would weigh the 25 to 35 pound kids, and the customers paid. The kids were then hog-tied and picked up like pieces of luggage and literally thrown into the back of a trunk or a pickup truck. These kids would look into my eyes with trust, wonder, and fear. Jim and I knew their fate. Having been in the dairy business his whole life, Jim had tried to harden my emotions in the past by telling me that this is how the dairy industry operates. I couldn't possibly keep all the kids, and there are not many people that want goats as pets. Jim and I had stood at the gate too many times listening to our baby goats cry as they were driven away. It was at one of these horrific moments when Jim and I looked at each other with tears in our eyes and began our journey to a no-kill life. It was a frightening time for us because it was the goat milk and the kids that were part of our income to support the farm. And she goes on to talk about how they found sanctuaries to care for their goats and how they got out of the business altogether. Now, I've heard people say that criticizing certain cultures for eating particular animals is racist. And if you've ever heard that yourself, I encourage you to listen to my podcast episode called Eating Animals. Every culture can take credit for cruelty to animals, so don't worry. I have as much of a problem with those who eat cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys, and rabbits as I do with those who eat horses, geese, goats, cats, and dogs. None of us has any right to claim superiority because we eat certain species but not others. We're talking about equal opportunity cruelty here. We all have blood on our hands. I also hear people say things like, well, I'm French, so it's just in my culture to eat a lot of cheese, or my family's Mexican, so I grew up eating goat, or I'm Greek, so lamb is a big part of our cuisine, or whatever it is. And I usually say, well, yeah, I'm Irish, so I grew up eating a lot of meat too. I mean, regardless of what our background is, all of us can lay claim to eating a lot of animals because that's how most of us grew up. But if you stop and think about the foundation of the diets of all of the various cultures, you'll see that plant foods are the foundation and meat and dairy products are relatively recent additions, especially in terms of the huge quantities we're eating now. So if we're going to reclaim our cultural food traditions, let's go back to the true foundations and claim the corn, tomatoes, and beans in our Latino cultures, or the olives, almonds, grapes, figs, dates, couscous in various Greek or Middle Eastern cuisine, plantains, okra, yams, mustard greens, and various root and tuber vegetables in a number of African cuisines. Let's reclaim the plant foods of our cultures instead of just falling back on the animal products to justify why we eat the way we do. There's plenty of plant foods to claim in each and every culture, including Irish, right? We got more than potatoes. We have cabbage and oats and other things. So dig a little deeper and you'll find your own roots in plant foods too. Another fast-growing sector of the food industry is goat's milk. Goat's milk and cheese made from goat's milk is very, very popular, and you'll often find people touting the nutritional qualities of this mammary secretion. It is highly, highly nutritious for goats. All of the same things I talk about in my cow's milk episodes apply here to goat's milk. The female goats are continually made pregnant in order to keep them lactating. The male goats either play the role of the studs, the animals used merely to provide sperm to the female, and they're killed when they're no longer studly, or the males have no role at all, as in the story I just told, and they're just sent off to be killed for humans to consume. The babies are, of course, eventually separated from their mothers. The babies are, of course, separated from their mothers, from her milk supply, so humans can have the milk instead. And finally, when the females are no longer productive, they too are killed for humans to consume. Yes, this applies to small farms. Yes, this applies to organic farms. Yes, this applies to farms who call themselves humane, happy, wholesome, or whatever adjective used to get you to buy the stuff. Humans have no nutritional requirement for the milk of any animal except humans. Right? I know you know that by now. Some goats have the high honor of being bred not for their secretions or flesh, but for their coats, for their fur, their hair, which goes by several names: mohair, fleece, goat wool, angora, cashmere, pashmina, depending on the breed who's being bred for the desired purpose. Angora goats produce the fiber known as mohair, cashmere goats produce cashmere, etc. Mohair is often used for doll's hair. That's essential stuff. I mean, we often hear people get defensive about this stuff, like, you know, that we're opposed to things that are keeping us alive and opposed to things that are so essential for human survival. You know, killing goats for doll's hair just doesn't seem essential to me. That's just my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. So, but as far as these goats who are raised for their hair, you know, they harvest the hair every 6 months or so. Goats are either sheared or they're clipped, and this can be done for many, many years. These goats obviously continue growing a coat again, and then it's shaved again. And this can go on for many years until they're eventually sent to slaughter. And certain breeds are kept for this purpose, you know, raised just for this purpose. But don't forget that the hair from goats that are killed for flesh, you know, meat goats, using their language, is its own business. I mean, so there's a relationship between the goat slaughter industry and the goat hair industry as well. Goat skin is used by humans in a variety of ways: rugs, shoes, boots, books, gloves, drums, and paper, parchment, a long time ago in the case of paper. You know that idiom, to treat someone with kid gloves? Well, that comes from the fact that gloves made with the soft skin of young goats, kid gloves, were a symbol of gentility. Hence the term handle someone with kid gloves. It means to treat someone gently. This doesn't apply to the goats, of course. Leather from young and older goats is still produced today. Another product we make from goats' bodies is something called catgut. Catgut has nothing to do with cats. They're still not certain what the etymology is, but it's called catgut. Catgut is the name applied to a cord of great toughness created from the intestines of a goat or sheep, and occasionally from those of a horse, a mule, a pig, or a donkey, and used extensively as sutures for surgical procedures in humans. Although synthetic alternatives are available, catgut sutures are widely used in hospitals throughout the world, including the United States. Catgut is also used to make strings for stringed musical instruments such as violins and harps, for hanging the weights of clocks, and for bow strings. I also found this little tidbit, which I thought you might find interesting. Apparently, the best strings for musical instruments are from lean, ill-fed animals because they yield the toughest gut. So I guess there's incentive to not feed the goat. Moving on, I mentioned that goats, like most other non-human animals, are used as research tools for a variety of experiments in the cloning and biomedical industries, in reproductive experiments, and military experiments. There are some experiments in the United Kingdom currently under protest by animal protectionists, which basically involve subjecting the animals to extreme pressure to simulate a deep sea catastrophe by giving them decompression sickness, also called the bends. After enduring these painful experiments, they're killed and autopsied. In the United States, each year, at least 320,000 primates, dogs, pigs, goats, sheep, rabbits, cats, and other animals are hurt and killed by the U.S. Department of Defense. The true number is probably higher. These experiments rank among the most painful conducted in this country. Goats, sheep, and pigs are shot in wound experiments. The Department of Defense has operated wound labs since 1957. At these sites, conscious or semi-conscious animals are suspended from slings and shot with high-powered weapons to inflict battle-like injuries for military surgical practice. In 1983, in response to public pressure, Congress limited the use of dogs in these labs. But countless goats, pigs, and sheep are still being shot, and at least one laboratory continues to shoot cats. At the Army's Fort Sam Houston Goat Lab, goats are hung upside down and shot in their hind legs. After physicians practice excising the wounds, any goat who survives is killed. As far back as 1946 in the South Pacific, 4,000 sheep, goats, and other animals loaded onto a boat and set adrift were killed or severely burned by an atomic blast detonated above them. The military nicknamed the experiment the Atomic Ark. Goats are not exempt from being human entertainment. Like all animals in the circus, goats endure the pain and humiliation of being trained for ridiculous, humiliating, or dangerous acts. For the purpose of entertaining us, the barbaric Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus has what's called the Barnyard Act, which is made up of 3 goats, 3 large pigs, 2 cows, 2 donkeys, 1 miniature pot-bellied pig, and a dog. During the course of the routine, among other things, the goats hop over the pigs, twirl in circles on their hind legs, stand on a rolling barrel with the pot bellied pig inside and run in circles around the elevated rim of the ring. In the many, many years that I have spent hanging out with goats, I can tell you I have never seen them twirl in circles on their hind legs, run around in circles on an elevated rim, or willingly stand on a rolling barrel. If you want to find pleasure in goats, you can definitely find it. They are playful, funny, funny, spunky animals. But look for it in animals who are enjoying their lives in a sanctuary setting, whose natural personalities and antics just happen to be entertaining. Of course, they love to play. They love to get up on their hind legs and they, you know, kind of butt at you and have fun that way. And they stand on things. They'll stand on anything they could possibly stand on. And they get into mischief, but there is a difference between appreciating these aspects while the animal thrives in a natural setting versus being trained, whipped, and kept for such a purpose. I know that it may seem innocent to visit a petting zoo or get a goat to be used as a lawnmower or a weed killer. I hear a lot of people, especially because I live in an area where it gets really dry, and so people use goats to basically mow all of this. And a lot of people see goats around here doing this, and it's becoming more and more popular to do so. But in many of these circumstances, because the animal is valued just for these purposes, the quality of their care is often low. They're often not given proper nutrition, shelter, or medical care. And the mentality of keeping goats just for our purposes is such that economics often comes first, and their inherent value secondary, if at all. Now, that doesn't mean that every person who has a goat is treating them poorly, but I just question the use of animals for our own purposes because it perpetuates the mentality that animals are here to be used by us, and it's that mentality that leads us to abuse our fellow earthlings. I, like many others, was very disturbed by a recent story in my local paper about the calculated killing of 15 baby goats brought in to help with wildfire control in the Oakland Hills. They were gunned down as they rested in an outdoor pen. One of the goats was decapitated and one was mutilated. If we're upset by this, and we should be, then I think the question we need to ask is, what's the difference? Killing goats or any animal for human consumption when we have no nutritional requirement for their flesh or secretions, for their hair, or for their skin is as senseless and cruel as the massacre that happened in that corral. It's as senseless and cruel as what happened to Neptune and his companion. I hope you don't mind my reading another poem. It's a pleasure for me to mingle my passions. Clearly, if you haven't noticed this yet, my passions for literature and language and poetry and animals. I found this poem in an anthology of Irish verse, and I love the reverence the poet James Stevens has for goats. His descriptions of the goats staring at the sky and lying down to brood reminds me of my Neptune, who loved to watch the sky and to meditate and brood and revel in the beauty and revel in his thoughts. As a quick aside, the poet uses the word furs a few times. It's spelled F-U-R-Z-E, and it refers to an evergreen shrub. Enjoy the imagery of this poem and think of Neptune. It's called The Goat Paths. The crooked paths go every way upon the hill. They wind about through the heather in and out of the quiet sunniness, and there the goats day after day stray in sunny quietness, cropping here and cropping there, as they pause and turn and pass, now a bit of heather spray, now a mouthful of the grass. In the deeper sunniness, in the place where nothing stirs, quietly in quietness, in the quiet of the firs, for a time they come and lie staring on the roving sky. If you approach, they run away. They leap and stare. Away they bound with a sudden angry sound to the sunny quietude, crouching down where nothing stirs in the silence of the firs, crouching down again to brood in the sunny solitude. If I were as wise as they, I would stray apart and brood. I would beat a hidden way through the quiet heather spray to a sunny solitude. And should you come, I'd run away. I would make an angry sound. I would stare and turn and bound to the deeper quietude, to the place where nothing stirs, in the silence of the firs. In that airy quietness, I would think as long as they, through the quiet sunniness, I would stray away to brood by a hidden, beaten way in the sunny solitude. I would think until I found something I can never find, something lying on the ground in the bottom of my mind. To Neptune. This is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.